The Jazz Scene Podcast gives an in-depth look at the lives and stories of the musicians performing in Columbus and beyond. This episode features local jazz musicians Logan Moore and Jared Shackelford. Their big band will perform at the Longstreet Studio on January 4th at 8 p.m. for our Community Jazz Series. Today's episode is hosted by Alex Burgoyne, Director of Production for the Jazz Arts Group of Columbus.
This is the Jazz Scene Podcast. Thank you, Logan Moore and Jared Shackelford, for being here. Thank you for joining us. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
Let's get into it, Jared. Where do you come from? You're not from Columbus, right?
No, I'm not.
So where's home for you?
Home for me is Centerville, Ohio, which is just like 20 minutes south of Dayton. So Dayton area, Dayton suburb. There's a really great music program there. Shout out to Peter Schomburg and Bill Burns for teaching me everything I knew about saxophone before I got here and setting me up for success.
Nice. You said saxophone, that's your major instrument, right?
Yep.
Do you play anything else?
Saxophonist, so I play, all four saxes and then some clarinet and flute kind of poorly. And then, arranger's keyboard. I can play the chords.
Okay.
And that's all I need.
Yeah, I like that. And you're an OSU guy, right?
Yes.
You graduated not so long ago.
Yep, freshly in May.
Nice. How was your time in school? What was your major?
It was good. It was great. I spent 5 years getting 2 degrees and a minor. I got a chemical engineering degree, a jazz composition degree, and then a business minor, which was a very long adventure that I won't go into a whole lot of detail on. But it was really fun. I'm an engineer, but I spent the vast majority of my time in the music buildings, and I'm a musician at heart a lot more than I am an engineer, which is why I got the degree in the first place.
Nice. Yeah, very good. And what about you, Logan? Where are you from? Where do you hail from?
Yeah, I'm born and raised in Hilliard, Ohio, so not too far from here. Went to Hilliard Davidson High School, went through a whole jazz program there, and because I was around the Columbus area, I was able to get involved with the youth jazz program here pretty early on. One of my first big experiences with jazz and improvising was actually a summer camp here at the Jazz Arts Group, led by Jay Migley, which is a lot of fun.
Hey.
So I went to Hilliard, did a lot of Jazz Arts Group stuff, and then went to University of North Texas for my undergrad. I got a degree in jazz studies on saxophone. And then as soon as I graduated in 2019, moved back here and started doing the thing, all the writing and the playing I could.
Yeah. For those of you listening at home, North Texas is like King Jazz School, like a big band university kind of.
Yeah, especially for a big band.
Yeah, for sure. So North Texas, and you grew up in Hilliard, which is my hometown as well, also same school. What about so you're both big band arrangers, but you play as well. So are there favorite venues in town? Do you like Columbus spots in particular?
All right, I really enjoy playing, big band gigs at the Clintonville Women's Club with Vaughn's band. Fun band, great venue. Really enjoy playing the small group gigs at Ginger Rabbit. It's been really nice to play at. It's one of my favorite venues to play at and even go listen to music. Just a really nice, speakeasy spot in town.
Yeah, I love the spot. And it's newish. Feels like it just kind of popped up and was excellent right away. Yeah. What about you, Jared? Do you have a favorite spot?
A couple. I'm not quite as prolific as Logan, so my gigs are pretty sporadic, but the places that I love to go and sit in, always Dick's Den with Derek DeCenzo on Mondays, and then Natalie's again with Derek and Bobby Floyd, and usually Reggie Jackson on Sundays, and then obviously on Mondays going to the Clintonville Women's Club to see the famous jazz orchestra.
Nice. Yeah, that reminds me, Jared, you were on the first community jazz concert of this season with Derek DeCenzo. You can check that out on JAG TV. Cool. So talk to me about big band arranging. We'll start back with Jared. What are you arranging for typically? Do you have any influences that kind of you let in or ones that you've noticed have seeped in?
Yeah, whenever I write, I'm writing first and foremost for, 17 pieces, all the horns plus your four-piece rhythm section. And then I usually tack the tuba, fifth trumpet, and French horns on as a way to include everybody in Von Weiser's band. Mm-hmm. But my primary influences Number one's probably Sammy Nestico. For, in my opinion, he's like the godfather of the big band and like the big band style. But more modern influences are, I really love Alan Baylock, who was a UNT guy, and I really love Chris Walden, who's like a German guy. So he's really awesome. And
is he WDR associated? Do you know?
Most likely, I think he's worked with them. Yeah, but cool. He's got a lot of like stuff that's really swinging, but also pretty like modern and kind of pushing it without getting like avant-garde.
Cool. Yeah. And what about you, Logan?
Well, typically when I'm writing charts, I typically try to write it for Vaughn Wiester's band so I can get it played. So that factors into things a lot, as well as sometimes write charts for Rick Bonetto's band. Rick Bonetto has 8 brass, Vaughn Wiester has 10 brass plus 3 French horns. So a little bit different instrumentation, but still basically the same instrumentation-wise.
Just so everybody knows at home, like, this is a really cool opportunity. Vaughn Wiester has this orchestra meets on Monday nights. Mm-hmm. What's the process of getting your chart played in that orchestra?
Well, early on, it was, kind of letting Vaughn know that, hey, I'm trying to, kind of interested in writing stuff. Can I try things out with the band? And then over time, there's been like a trial and error process where he can get to trust me to bring in a chart that the band will be able to play and be fine. But the biggest thing is making sure that the chart is ready for the band to play. Everything's clean. Everybody can read their part. Everybody has a part because he has a few extra instruments in his band. If you don't have a French horn part, he's not going to let you play it until you write a French horn part.
Right.
Because the band wants something to play. It's not just an experiment for you to have something, a band to listen to play your chart. He also wants the band to play and the audience to hear your chart. So to have the whole band have something to play. And just make sure make sure that all the parts are there. He's okay with you bringing the chart in. If he can fit in the set somewhere. There are some nights where, hey guys, I'm doing a certain show. I can't really fit it in tonight. Bring it in next week.
Got it.
So just making sure that everything, that the show side is still good and it's not just a rehearsal side.
That's interesting. I've been playing the band for almost 10 years and I didn't know that that's how it worked. That's cool.
Yeah.
Is the same for you, Jared? A lot of times you're writing for a singer for that band.
Yeah, lately I've been writing for vocalists a lot. But it was the same for me at the beginning. Devin Coons introduced me to him and he was like, Jared's a amateur arranger and he'd like to have his charts played. And so Vaughn called me like the next day and he was like, okay, here's the scoop, here's how you add the tuba and the French horns, here's the best way to add them to your brass section, just make sure you've got all your parts, and then like Logan said, make sure everything's clean, make sure everything's legible so that you've got one chance for them to sight read it, so you need to set them up to do it as good as possible.
It's like a pretty high pressure situation for a beginning arranger for Yeah, that's cool. Logan, I want to go back to your influences, but I also think like you have this sort of unique skill of you can take an arrangement and kind of mimic it. So in your answer about influences, will you talk about that?
Yeah. So first, I'll start with the writers who have influenced me the most. It would definitely be Bill Holman's at the top of the list. What he wrote for Stan Kenton as well as the Terry Gibbs Band. I think because of my growing up and going to Vaughn Wiester's band so often when I was getting into jazz and arranging, I think Terry Gibbs has his second favorite book of charts, second to his own.
Right.
That kind of West Coast style, the Bill Holman, Manny Album, Marty Paich, those kind of West Coast writers, a big influence on me, as well as writers for the Basie band, like Sammy Nestico, Thad Jones, before and while he was with the band and after he made his own band. Those kind of writers as well, just good swinging charts, and then the counterpoint of Bill Holman were big influences on me.
Did you study any classical counterpoint when you were in school, either of you?
Yeah, I took some classical composition classes.
Do you feel like it's part of what you're thinking about?
There are definitely certain rules that you have to follow that I realize later on, like, oh, that's why this chart doesn't sound good that I wrote. It's because some of these fundamental things, the way you resolve lines, the way that certain lines interact with each other.
Right.
Certain rules that the Baroque writers followed very explicitly that maybe we can get away with not breaking those rules sometimes, but following those rules definitely help and, you know, help guide you in certain ways.
Sure. Okay, now I want to ask about your superpower. Talk to me about that. Yeah.
So I had when I was taking a ranging class at North Texas, this is my junior year, one of the TAs had advised us, something that he was given advice for a while ago, is to write your own arrangement in the style of a like a classic chart that you love. So his example, I think, was Count Basie's corner pocket. He's like, I wrote a chart, like an arrangement of all of me or something, but everything in the chart that I wrote was based off of, you know, the counterpoint, the lines, the not the harmonies necessarily, but just the way that the chart for corner pocket was laid out, because that's such a classic example of what a great chart is, which should sound like. So let me imitate everything I can from that.
Totally.
So I was given that advice, and a little bit later on, I decided to try that out on my own. And I ended up, I don't know how I got this idea, but to do one of my favorite arrangements of all time is The Groove Merchant, Thad Jones. Uh-huh. And I somehow got the idea to do an arrangement of Amazing Grace in that style. And it just so happens to be that they have almost an identical chord progression. So I was able to really mimic everything. So that was one of my earlier really successful charts, I think.
The first time I remember playing that chart, I think maybe we had read it once before, but the first time I remember, there had been a tragedy in the community, in that big band community, and we played that tune, and it was like the whole room was heavy and having a hard time, but that chart lifted the veil a little bit. It was like an amazing thing. Yeah. Nice work.
I think that was because the band knew that chart by that point.
Right.
We hadn't played it in quite a while. I had just gotten back from one of my years in school. I might have just graduated. Mm-hmm. But the band hadn't played it for a while. I just happened to bring it. I wasn't even planning on it. And Vaughn had recommended that I start bringing a folder and just like have a few charts in case, rather than what I would normally do is just bring one chart. So I just happened, I think that was the first week, I brought a folder of like three or four charts and just happened to have it. And I know the band always, by that point, whenever we played it, always had a really good time playing it. And that particular show, we didn't know if we were going to finish the gig with what had happened.
Right.
So it was, I went up to Vaughn and was like, hey, I used to have this idea, like, let's play Amazing Grace. I have the chart. I don't know if you want to do it or not, but I think it might be, you know, what the band, not to try and sound egotistical, but what the band might want, because everybody always enjoys it. And it just happened, you know, he happened to agree. Let me pass it out. Band played it. We took a break right after, see how we felt, and I think we were able to continue the gig after that.
Definitely lighten the mood. Yeah, well, nice. Jared, I've also heard you do this. I don't know if you are doing it on purpose or not, but like I hear Frank Sinatra, those At the Sands arrangements and some of your vocal writing. Is that something you think about emulating different writers, different eras?
When I'm writing for vocalists, especially, the vocal charts that I've listened to is all of the Basie, Sinatra stuff. So usually not intentional, but I have, at Logan's recommendation, done that before with one chart. It's an original, but I did a little Darlin' mimicry, I guess. And it's one of my favorite charts. It stands up. It's chill. It's really fun.
Cool.
It's like one of my favorites that I've ever written, so that went really well.
I think that's like a great piece of advice that students miss in school, or like especially at the beginning of their jazz journey. Like, if you sound like Thad Jones, there are worse things, even if you don't sound like yourself. Yeah. Right.
It removes a lot of the pressure to be like fully and totally original. I mean, not to make it sound like you're like, it's like bad that you're not original.
Right.
It's just that you have a model to go after, and you can, like you just said, if you're sounding like Thad Jones, if you're sounding like Nestico, you could be doing a lot worse than that.
Totally. Most of us are.
I remember reading a book about Bob Brookmeyer, and one of the things that was a recurring theme throughout some of the chapters was his emphasis on form in a chart.
Mm-hmm.
How form is everything. You have a bad form, you have a bad chart. And I think that's what's so great about the charts that Jared and I have emulated in these arrangements, is the form is so good that the chart is just going to be good.
Right, like it's, no problems.
You know, you write a decent melody, you know, but keeping that form, that instrumentation, you know, trumpets play here, saxes play here, everything's laid out so well in those, you know, Thad and Basie charts that it's kind of hard to go wrong
right.
with whatever you write over it.
Right. Man, well, I could talk about arranging for another hour and a half, but let's get to the concert at hand. You guys are playing at the at Longstreet Studios on January 5th?
4th.
You guys are playing at Longstreet Studios on January 4th. It's an 8 p.m. concert. What can we expect to hear? This is a big band concert, right? So what's going to happen?
So we're going to have probably about half and half, half my arrangements, half Jared's arrangements, with a lot of great musicians, both from Columbus and a little bit out of town. We have Jim Rupp coming down to play drums for us. Eric Gimble, fantastic lead trumpet player, as well as some young OSU cats and Capital cats. Ivan Murray, great trumpet player at Ohio State.
He's jazz alum.
And some older, I think Rob Dove's playing, Billy Wolf. So you kind of getting some of the different generations of Columbus musicians. I know I'm planning on bringing my arrangement of Amazing Grace, as well as a newer chart of mine that I based off of A Theme and Variations by Bill Holman, that I've been kind of proud of recently, as well as some other charts. Haven't fully decided the set list yet, but
cool.
Got anything you bring him, Jared?
Yeah, my original plan was to do all new stuff, not new as in original, but new as in arrangements that I hadn't written and played before. We're very close to the concert. It seems like that might not be the case.
You got some stuff going on between now and then.
So one or two new things.
Cool.
And then a little bit of older stuff. I'm writing a very, very long and intense and fun arrangement of Nature Boy that I can tell is definitely going to be my favorite on the show. I think right now it's clocking in at like 8 minutes, so I'll probably only be doing like three charts with that one in my book.
Cool. Nice. That is exciting. I'm really excited for this concert. I don't know what that room's going to sound like with 17 pieces in there, but I'm excited to find out. Where can we find your music in the meantime? Where does it live somewhere?
Yeah, so I have a lot of my arrangements for both big band, and I do a lot of saxophone ensemble arrangements on my YouTube channel. It's Moresax1, Moresax1.
Very clever.
Number one.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. Came up with that in high school.
Nice. Could have gone worse.
Yeah. So I have a lot of my arrangements up on my YouTube as well as my Instagram. That is the same username. Mm-hmm. A lot of various different things. I've been posting pretty often, like once a week, a different arrangement. I also have a few Christmas CDs out. Mary Saxmas, volumes 1, 2, and 3. find it wherever you find music.
Yeah, amazing.
And then some live performances coming up with Invisible Lights Quartet, Waves to Ashe, and some other big bands in town.
Cool. What about you, Jared? I've seen some of your stuff on YouTube too, right?
Yeah. I have a YouTube channel. I think it's just, I'm pretty sure it just shows up as like my first and last name. So Jared Shackelford. If you type in, I don't know, jazz or big band or something, they'll probably guarantee that I show up. And then my Instagram is ShackelfordWinds, like WINDS, as in woodwinds. And I'm usually posting the same kind of stuff on both of those. If you want to know where I'm playing, you'll probably find it on my Instagram. But it's pretty sporadic. So
cool. Thank you, Logan and Jared, for joining us on the Jazz Scene podcast today. You can all join us at the Longstreet Studio on January 4th at 8 p.m. for community jazz with the Logan Moore and Jared Shackelford Big Band. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
The Jazz Scene is presented by Jazz Arts Group of Columbus, America's oldest nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing the art of jazz. Our theme music is titled 3-4 Times by Michael Cox. This episode was hosted by Alex Burgoyne and produced and engineered by Mercedes Aviles. Subscribe to The Jazz Scene wherever you get your podcasts.